Chris Murphy of Connecticut. First of all, Senator, we are delighted that you're with us. It's always a great pleasure to have a member of your august body visit us and and take pity on us and talk to us. Thank you so much for doing it, Chris. Appreciate it. Let me start by asking you about Saudi Arabia. This is a big problem for America. I mean, these guys over there, they're not very nice. They don't treat their people in a democratic or, in my mind, fair fashion. They're anything but feminists. and yet we have to do business with them, don't we?
So we've had a long, important relationship with the Saudis, and you know, much of it has been dictated by our interest in their oil and our dependency on the product that they produce. But you know, they also have been a partner in many counterterrorism efforts. They have provided the impetus behind the Sunni detente with Israel that's been important for the United States and our important ally Israel. But it's increasingly hard to ignore some pretty big holes in the relationship. At the foundation of the problematic nature of the Saudis' interactions in the region is their support for a very, very conservative, intolerant brand of Islam called Wahhabism that they spread, that they proselytize throughout the region, that often forms the building blocks of the very extremist movements that we are fighting. Today, they are involved in a civil war inside Yemen that is creating enormous space inside that country for al-Qaeda and ISIS to grow, and it has also resulted in the killing of thousands of civilians. I've been raising this question of whether or not the United States relationship with the Saudis needs to be revisited. I argue that we need to place more conditions on the relationship and certainly on the military sales that we send to the Saudis, and recognize that as bad a player as the Iranians have been in the neighborhood, the Saudis' support for the building blocks of Islamic fundamentalism and Islamic extremism is something that we can no longer avoid.
As you know, Chris, and running radio stations, I certainly know, there are, of course, people who believe that the Saudis were somehow implicated in 9/11, that the famous plane that was allowed to take off with the Saudis on it, allegedly. I have no idea whether it's so or not. And then there's a famous report that has been stymied so that people can't see what the government knew about all of that. What do you make of that?
Well, there are these, you know, infamous 28 pages, the addendum to the 9/11 report, which discuss the work that the committee did to investigate the Saudi links with the 9/11 bombings, and the president is going to make a decision about whether to release those pages. I think the Saudis themselves have been supportive of those pages being released, which I think tell you what they believe are in them. I have been, much more prospective in, the way in which I approach the U.S.-Saudi relationship, in that we absolutely know for certain that the Saudis fund the Wahhabi movement, which sends this intolerant brand of Islam all around the world. And, we received testimony in open committee in the Foreign Relations Committee just 2 weeks ago, in which experts said that the recruiting materials of groups like ISIS are word for word identical to Wahhabi textbooks. And so there's no doubt that we need to be tougher with the Saudis and say, listen, you have to cut off extremism at its source. And we have to, ask questions about why we would continue to send arms to a country that isn't serious about that. So, regardless of whether or not there are links to the Saudi government and people that were surrounding the 9/11 attacks, we know that going forward, we will be safer if the Saudis are more serious about attacking extremism.
Now, we know that there have been a lot of leaks that say the Saudis are unhappy with the American government right now, that they're waiting for another president to come into office. What's that about?
Well, I think they've enjoyed a fairly unconditional relationship with the United States for years. And frankly, it's beyond me why they, aren't more pleased with the conduct of this administration vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia. This administration has dramatically increased the arms sales to the Saudis. They have agreed to coordinate with the Saudis with respect to this campaign, military campaign in Yemen, which I think is a mistake. And so, President Obama has acknowledged that there are some downsides to the relationship with Saudi Arabia, and the president has opened up new diplomatic relations with the Iranians, who are the Saudis' sworn enemy. So I guess I understand why they're upset, but you know, our job as a country isn't to make Saudi Arabia happy.
Yeah.
Our job as a country is to protect our national security interests and to try to bring stability to the Middle East. And occasionally delivering tougher messages to the Saudis, I think, is a pretty important component of protecting our national security interests. So I understand they're upset at times, but you know, that's not our job, to keep them happy 100% of the time.
I had a long talk with our mutual friend Joe Courtney the other day on this very program, in which I asked him about why we needed another nuclear submarine. And, you know, he basically told me because there were good reasons. And then we start seeing North Korea building nuclear submarines and others. And I know it's a big part of your constituency, and it's billions of dollars by the time you're done with one. But you think we need it?
Listen, naval power in many ways is more important than ever before. So we've taken for granted for a long time that the seas are open for commercial traffic, protected by the United States Navy. The Chinese are contesting U.S. hegemony over the seas as we speak. They are building man-made islands. They are radically transforming the size and the scope of their fleet. And I don't think anybody has any doubt that their end game here is to be able to determine who moves through Asian waters and who doesn't. And so the United States does have to invest in our naval fleet, and we have to acknowledge that the safest and most powerful components of that fleet are submarines. The Chinese now have the ability to target some of our surface vessels in a way that they never did before. They still don't have the ability to come after and find our submarines. And so as the Chinese start to try to assert their power within Asian waters, which are important commercial shipping lanes, the United States has to power up as well. In addition, you know, as Joe probably told you, these submarines, you know, have become, you know, much more than just a nuclear deterrent. We're launching counterterrorism operations from these submarines. These submarines are an important part of our intelligence collection around the world. These are multi-systemic platforms, and while some people may think that they're an anachronism of the Cold War, you know, the opposite is in fact true. They may be more integral to the future defense of the United States and our allies in open waters than any other component of our military.
You're a superdelegate, aren't you?
I am.
And you're going to go to the convention. We hear that Bernie Sanders wants to bring things over to the left on the platform. Will you have anything to say about that?
Well, I'll certainly have something to say about the platform of the party, and I hope that some of the things that Bernie's talked about very loudly in his campaign are part of our platform, and campaign finance reform is at the top of the list. Now, Hillary Clinton has a pretty progressive campaign finance proposal herself, but a lot of the attention that Bernie's got and a lot of the reason that young people are attracted to his campaign is because people want this big money out of politics, and I hope that our platform reflects the enthusiasm that Bernie's campaign has received, in part because of how vocal he's been in taking on big money.
When we come back, Chris Murphy, I want to talk to you about a couple of things, Merrick Garland and the Supreme Court, which we've touched on. But I also want to talk to you about who you might think would make a good vice president.